A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I have to say, it's the rare prompt that arrives with sweat still on it. He's mid-move in Jerusalem, and he's discovered this beautiful little paradox. The platform trolley and ratchet straps that get you past every security door in the city. They also turn you into a walking curiosity magnet. Everyone wants to know what's in the boxes.
Which is the problem he didn't know he was signing up for? The last episode we did on this, we cracked the access problem. Look the part, you're invisible to security. But Daniel's out there doing 300-meter sprints with a hand truck and getting interrogated by neighbors, building staff, random passers-by. The props that grant passage also broadcast, I have interesting cargo.
You gain physical access to everywhere and lose social access to privacy in the same transaction. The trolley is both credential and billboard.
Jerusalem makes this worse in a very specific way. You've got one of the highest concentrations of government and diplomatic personnel per capita in the Middle East. So when someone sees boxes moving through a building, the mental math isn't someone's relocating their couch. It's what embassy documents are in there, whose divorce papers, which tech company's server rack.
The city is trained to be curious about cargo, so Daniel's asking us for a social defense stack. Three layers, escalating. Layer 1. Pretend you don't speak any local language. Exploit the politeness norm that says you don't keep badgering someone who clearly can't understand you. Layer 2, if the language barrier fails, become aggressively boring. The kind of bored professional whose answers make people regret asking. Layer 3, the nuclear option. I'm under an NDA. I can't even tell you what floor I'm going to.
I love this because it inverts the whole social engineering playbook. Usually, we're trying to get noticed just enough to seem official. Here, the goal is to become a conversational dead end, a person-shaped wall.
The first layer is the one that's genuinely elegant. It's not just pretend you don't speak the language. It's a specific performance designed to signal permanent incomprehension, not temporary confusion, not, let me try English. The asker needs to walk away feeling like continuing would be socially rude, not like they failed to find the right language.
Before we get into the tactical stuff, I want to sit with why this is even a problem. Because on the surface, a mover should be the most invisible person in a building, your furniture with legs. But Daniel's experience says the opposite. And I think the Jerusalem factor is doing specific work here.
It's the density of interesting people in a small radius. You can't throw a rock in some of these neighborhoods without hitting someone who works for a government, an embassy, a defense contractor, or a startup that's doing something it can't talk about. The baseline assumption is that any given box might matter.
That changes the social calculus around the mover. In most cities, the person with the hand truck is a service ghost. You look through them. In Jerusalem, they're a potential intelligence leak, or at least a source of gossip. Did you see the Cohen family moving out? What do you think happened? The mover becomes a window into the building's social and professional drama.
Which is why Daniel's question is sharper than it first looks. He's not asking how to be invisible. He's asking how to be unapproachable. Those are different things.
Invisibility is about not being seen. Unapproachability is about being seen and immediately dismissed as not worth the effort. The first is a costume problem. The second is a performance problem.
The three layers he's proposing map onto that perfectly. Language denial buys you a free pass through the politeness norm. In a culture where it's considered rude to keep talking at someone who clearly can't understand you, incomprehension is a shield. Deflection handles the cases where the shield cracks, and the confidentiality script is the emergency brake.
What I like about the stack is that it escalates without escalating. You're not getting more aggressive. You're just layering on progressively harder reasons why the conversation can't continue. It's a social off-ramp at every exit. Let's get into the mechanics of layer 1, because this is where the performance actually lives or dies. The language denial strategy isn't pretend you don't speak Hebrew. That's amateur hour. The second someone hears your accent or sees you hesitate, they'll switch to English and you're trapped.
Jerusalem is a city where everyone speaks at least three languages badly and two more well enough to ask what's in your boxes. You can't just mumble and hope.
The move is to pick a language that creates what I'd call a comprehension dead end. It needs three properties. One, it's not locally recognizable. So, no Arabic, no Hebrew, no English, no Russian, no French, no Amharic. Jerusalem has speakers of all of those within a five-block radius. Two, it has no significant diaspora community in the area that might produce a real speaker. Three, you can produce 3 to 4 plausible phrases in it without sounding like you're reading a phonetic cheat sheet. Mandarin and Korean are the top candidates for Jerusalem. Low probability of a native speaker encountering you on a random stairwell. And crucially, they have high exotic value, by which I mean the average Israeli hears them and immediately thinks, I have zero chance of bridging this gap. The brain gives up faster.
There's something almost respectful about it. You're not saying, I won't talk to you. You're saying the universe has arranged itself such that we cannot talk. The asker gets the safe face.
That's the politeness norm doing the work. In Middle Eastern social contexts, persisting with someone who clearly cannot understand you is seen as rude. It's not just awkward, it's a minor social violation. You're imposing on someone who has no way to engage. The confusion cascade exploits this.
Break down the cascade.
They ask a question. In Hebrew, English, whatever. You respond immediately with your rehearsed phrase in Mandarin. Something like, Bu bu hui yisi, wei bu bu ding. Sorry, I don't understand. But here's the key. You deliver it with a slight head tilt and an apologetic shrug. The body language says, I wish I could help. This is embarrassing for both of us. The words say, I am a linguistic dead end.
If they try again in a different language?
Consistency is the entire game. If you switch responses, you signal that you're adapting, which means you understood enough to adapt. The performance must signal permanent incomprehension, not temporary confusion. Temporary confusion invites the other person to try harder. Permanent incomprehension invites them to walk away.
The head tilt and shrug are load-bearing. They're not decoration.
They're the difference between this person doesn't speak my language and this person is being difficult. The first triggers the politeness norm. The second triggers irritation, which makes people dig in. You want them to feel that continuing would make them the rude one in the interaction.
You have to rehearse this until it's reflex. Hesitation breaks the illusion.
That's the part most people get wrong. They think they can improvise. But under pressure, you're sweating, you're holding a box, someone's asking pointed questions, your brain reaches for the path of least resistance, which is your native language. You need the foreign phrase to be more automatic than English. Drill it until you can say it while doing mental arithmetic.
Which brings us to the nightmare scenario. What happens when the person you've just delivered your flawless Mandarin to responds in fluent Mandarin?
This is where you need a backup script, and it has to be ready before you need it. My recommendation, switch to a second mode entirely. Pretend to be a deaf mover who reads lips in a language you don't speak. Point to your ear, shake your head, and make a writing gesture. The research on what's called performed communication disability shows that people disengage significantly faster when they suspect a genuine barrier rather than a language mismatch.
Because a language barrier still feels bridgeable. There's always Google Translate or finding someone else. A disability barrier feels final. People don't want to be the person who kept pushing after that.
You don't need to fake sign language. You just need to signal, I cannot hear you convincingly. Point to ear, apologetic smile, point to the boxes, keep moving. The combination of the physical signal plus continued task engagement is very hard to override socially.
There's a case study that maps onto this perfectly. Film crew in Jerusalem a few years back. They were shooting B-roll in some politically sensitive neighborhoods. Crew members wore crew-only badges and responded to every question in Polish, even from Hebrew speakers. Locals assumed they were European tourists working on a documentary. They shot for 3 days without a single meaningful interruption.
Polish is brilliant for Jerusalem. It's European enough to read as foreign, not European enough to have random speakers on every corner. And the crew-only badge did double duty. It explained their presence while making it boring. Oh, film people. They're always pointing cameras at things.
What I'm taking from all of this is that the language denial layer is really a piece of theater. You're not lying about your identity. You're staging a small, self-contained scene where the only possible outcome is the other person giving up. The script is three words. The blocking is a head tilt and a shrug, and the curtain falls in under 10 seconds.
The beauty of it is that it doesn't require you to be a good actor. It requires you to be a consistent one. Bad acting with perfect consistency reads as authentic. Good acting with inconsistency reads as deception.
Daniel needs to pick his language, learn his four phrases cold, and practice the confusion cascade until it's muscle memory, and have the death mover backup in his pocket.
One more thing on the phrases. Don't just learn, I don't understand. Learn, I don't understand. Sorry, no, excuse me. And one longer nonsense sentence that sounds like an explanation. The longer one is your closer. If someone's still hovering after the first two, you deploy the paragraph. The sheer length signals, we are done here, in every language.
The language layer has a hard ceiling, and Daniel already knows it. Building security, for one. You can't Mandarin. Shrug your way past a guard who needs to log you in. And some neighbors are just persistent. The kind of person who sees your head tilt and thinks challenge accepted.
That's where layer two kicks in. Conversational deflection. And the goal shifts. With language denial, you're trying to be incomprehensible. With deflection, you're trying to be boring. Not hostile, not evasive, just so profoundly uninteresting that the other person loses the will to continue.
The bored professional. I've met this guy at every loading dock I've ever walked past. He answers questions like each word is costing him something.
There's actual research backing this up. Studies on what are called task focus cues show that when someone continues physical engagement with a task while giving minimal responses, people interpret it as a signal of unavailability. Follow-up questions drop by up to 60%. The body is saying, I'm working, and the voice is saying, I'm barely here. Together, they're a conversation killer.
You don't stop moving. That's the key. The question comes in, your hands stay on the trolley, your eyes stay on the boxes, and your answer comes out sideways.
And you've got three specific techniques in the deflection toolkit. First, the non-answer answer. Someone asks, what's in the boxes? You say, just moving stuff, same as yesterday, with a sigh. Not a hostile sigh, just the sigh of a man who has moved boxes every day of his adult life and will move boxes every day until he dies. The sigh does more work than the words.
The sigh is the credential. It says there is nothing novel happening here, and you are the fifth person to ask.
Second technique, the redirect to logistics. Someone's getting curious about the cargo. You hit them with, you know if the loading dock closes at 5 or 6. It's a question that demands an answer, which flips the dynamic. Now they're the ones being asked for information, and it's aggressively boring information. Nobody wants to talk about loading dock hours.
That's devious. You're not refusing to engage. You're engaging on a topic so dull it functions as a refusal.
It's hard to be offended by someone who's asking you for practical help. The social script says you either answer or you walk away. Either way, the original question dies.
What's the third one?
Escalation to authority. You'll have to talk to my supervisor. I just drive the trolley. This one's elegant because it acknowledges the question while making you the wrong person to answer it. You're not being difficult. You're being low-ranking. Nobody argues with the guy who says he's not authorized.
There's no supervisor to find. The supervisor is a ghost.
The supervisor is always a ghost. That's the beauty of it. The person asking now has a quest. Find the supervisor, instead of a conversation with you. Most people will not take the quest.
The deflection layer is really three different ways of saying this conversation is not happening, without ever saying it. You're either too boring, too busy, or too low on the org chart to be useful.
The physicality matters as much as the words. You're not making eye contact. You're adjusting a ratchet strap. You're checking a clipboard that has nothing on it. Every gesture says, I have a job to do, and talking to you is not that job.
Which brings us to the problem deflection can't solve. The person who's seen through all of it. The neighbor who's been watching you for 10 minutes and knows you're not just some guy with a trolley. Or building security who's been told to verify what's coming in.
The confidentiality escape hatch. This is the nuclear option, and you don't deploy it casually, but when you need it, it ends conversations.
Walk me through the script.
I'm under a non-disclosure agreement. I can't even tell you what floor I'm going to. If I say anything, I lose my job. No apology, no elaboration. The legal framing does the work.
People actually buy this?
Research on NDA invocation in service contexts shows people rarely challenge it. The word non-disclosure hits a specific nerve. It transforms curiosity into potential liability. Nobody wants to be the person who got someone fired. And in Jerusalem specifically, this lands with extra weight.
Because half the city works in jobs that actually have NDAs.
Government, defense, diplomatic corps, tech. The baseline assumption is that any given move might involve sensitive materials. It's not a stretch. It's barely even a lie. The person asking probably has an NDA of their own.
They hear, "I can't tell you," and their own professional experience fills in the rest.
You're not convincing them of something implausible. You're activating a category they already respect. And the social firewall goes up. Pushing past an NDA feels like a violation, not just persistence.
There's a physical prop that pairs with this, isn't there?
The laminated sign. Confidential move. Do not disturb. Attached to the trolley, visible from both sides. Studies on signage compliance in public spaces show that explicit written instructions reduce verbal queries by 40 to 60% before you even open your mouth. The sign pre-answers the question.
A laminated sign has a kind of institutional gravity. It didn't come from you. It came from somewhere official, somewhere with a laminator.
Lamination is the universal signal of bureaucracy. A piece of paper is a suggestion. A laminated piece of paper is a policy.
You know who's been doing this forever? They've got the whole stack. Official credentials, practiced non-responsiveness, and the diplomatic pouch legal fiction that says the bag doesn't even legally exist for inspection purposes.
It's the same architecture. Credential says, I'm authorized. Demeanor says, I'm not available. Legal frame says, you can't ask. The diplomatic pouch is just a very old, very formal version of the laminated, confidential move sign.
There's a company in Tel Aviv that's built a business on exactly this. Secure Logistics. They do tech company relocations, branded uniforms, NDA scripts, the whole package. The movers are trained to say, I'm under confidentiality, before anyone even asks.
Which tells you the demand is real. Tech companies in Israel are paranoid about hardware walking out the door during a move. A server rack in the wrong hands is a breach, so they built the social engineering into the service.
Daniel's stack is complete. Language denial buys you the first 10 seconds. Deflection buys you the next 30. The confidentiality script terminates anything that survives.
Each layer is a fallback, not a replacement. You don't skip to the NDA because you're tired of shrugging in Mandarin. You escalate only when the previous layer fails. The discipline of the stack is what makes it work. If Daniel's actually going to deploy this, the thing that separates a working stack from a stack that collapses mid-hallway is rehearsal. And I mean the boring kind. Standing in your apartment saying buho yisi to a lamp until it feels less natural to speak English.
The lamp won't judge you. The neighbor with the suspiciously specific questions will.
Hesitation is the tell that kills all three layers. If you pause before the Mandarin, they know you're translating in your head. If you pause before, just moving stuff, they know you're inventing. If you pause before, I'm under an NDA, they know you're reaching for it. The scripts have to be reflex.
Rehearse the stack in order. Language denial first. Drill the four phrases until you can do them while actually carrying a box. Then the deflection scripts. The non-answer. The logistics redirect. The authority dodge. Then the confidentiality speech. Run the whole sequence like a fire drill.
The physical props do a surprising amount of the work before you open your mouth. We mentioned the laminated sign. 40 to 60% reduction in verbal queries, that's real. But you can go further. A uniform patch that says Secure Logistics or just a specific color of ratchet strap, something that reads as institutional rather than personal. People see the sign and the patch together and their brain fills in. This is a regulated operation before they formed a question.
The props are the pre-answer. They make the scripts redundant for most people, which means you only deploy the verbal layers on the stubborn ones.
Here's the thing. Test it first. Don't debut this stack on the day you're moving sensitive materials through a building full of curious diplomats. Do a dry run. Move a few boxes of nothing through your own building. See what questions actually come up. See where your performance cracks. Refine based on real feedback.
That's the part most people skip, because it feels silly. But the dry run is where you discover that your Mandarin phrase sounded great in the shower and ridiculous under fluorescent lights while someone's asking about server racks.
The meta lesson in all of this, and I think it's what Daniel's really getting at, is that social engineering isn't just an access problem, it's a cost management problem. Getting through the door is step one. Step two is not paying for that access with your privacy, your time, or your cover. The best credential in the world is worthless if it makes everyone want to talk to you.
The credential that gets you in, and the credential that gets you left alone. They're rarely the same thing. Daniel figured out the first one, the trolley and the straps. The second one is the stack. And the stack is really just a way of saying, I am not the person you're looking for, in three different languages. One of them literal, two of them social.
The invisible mover isn't invisible at all. He's just a conversation nobody wants to finish.
Here's the thing that keeps me up about all of this. What happens when the stack works too well?
What do you mean?
I mean, the same task focus cues that tell a neighbor, this guy's too boring to bother, might tell a trained security guard something very different. Someone who's been taught to read behavior. They see the no eye contact, the constant motion, the laminated sign that's just a little too professional. And they think, this person is performing.
That's the second order problem, yeah. The stack is calibrated for civilians, curious neighbors, chatty building staff, the guy who wants to know if you're moving in or out so he can gossip. But security personnel are trained to spot exactly the kind of controlled behavior we're advocating. No normal mover is that disciplined.
The performance that deflects one audience flags you to another.
That tension's only going to get sharper. Cities are layering on more surveillance. CCTV in every lobby. Access logs that track every badge swipe. Neighbors with doorbell cameras who'll post your photo to the building WhatsApp group before you've finished unloading. The invisible mover archetype might need to evolve into something new.
Digital social engineering. Managing the trail of data you leave, not just the conversations you shut down.
Right now, we're optimizing for the face-to-face encounter. But the camera in the elevator doesn't care that you shrugged in Mandarin. It just records that you were on floor 7 for 14 minutes.
Which is a problem for a different episode. For now, Daniel's got a working stack and a city full of boxes to move.
We want to hear from people who've built their own versions of this. Listeners who figured out some weird specific hack for urban anonymity, send them in. The prompts that arrive with sweat on them make the best episodes.
Now Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1500s, a Portuguese navigator off the coast of Papua New Guinea documented a local ant species whose colony pheromones were so potent that indigenous traders used crushed ant paste to mark document seals. The scent reportedly outlasted wax in tropical humidity by several weeks.
Right. Which leaves us with an open question worth sitting with. The best social defense stack in the world still has to work on the one person who's paid to see through it. The gap between unapproachable and suspicious is narrower than it looks.
As the cameras multiply and the neighbors get more watchful, that gap's only going to shrink. Something to think about the next time you're hauling boxes past the security desk.
This has been my weird prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you've got your own social engineering hacks, or any prompt strange enough to make us build a three-layer defense for it, email the show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be here, probably behind a laminated sign.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.